Alright, I'm going to ask everyone to put down your notebooks and close up your computers for a second. Stand up with me. We've had a long conference. We've had a long day. We're going to stretch out a little bit. Alright, and we're actually going to enact out part of an algorithm. Alright, you've just been born into the world. You're a stick man or you're a stick woman. You exist in this random place in this universe. I'm going to explain the algorithm to you, and then we're going to start it, okay? You're going to pick a random location in the world that you can walk to. You're going to walk towards that location. When you reach that location, you're going to pick another random location in the world that you can walk to, and you're going to start walking to that location. When I clap my hands, you're going to look around you and find the nearest stick person. You're going to head towards them, and when you reach them, you're going to play, okay? So in stick world, playing is just raising your hands and going back and forth like that. Everyone try that so you know what it is.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
What if we bump into another stick figure while we're randomly?
Please try not to do that.
No, do you turn around after?
In the virtual world, that doesn't matter, but in the real world, you might get hurt.
We go switch out.
Okay, so everyone, just to recap, you're going to pick a random location in the world. You're going to walk towards that location. When you reach that location, you'll pick another random location. When I clap my hands, I'm changing your state, okay? And you're going to look for the closest stick person, walk towards them, and when you meet them, you're going to start playing, okay? Ready? Everyone got a location in their head? Okay, start.
That was my lesson.
Everyone should still be walking. If you reach your first location, you pick another one.
This location.
This moment.
Okay, everyone change your state. Find the closest stick person. Walk towards them. You're a stick person. All right, that's it. Thank you for indulging me. You can go back to your seats.
That's good.
Okay, this is the Society of Stick People. This is a real-time interactive installation that I consider in an art context. So I'll be installing this in a gallery for a group show coming up at the end of May. It's going to be running continuously in the gallery space with some other conceptual artwork. So this is something that I've been working on for a little while, off and on over the years. And I'll just let you watch it for a little bit, and then I'll talk about it a little more.
Have you thought about birds or fish in 3 minutes? Randomly.
Sure. As you will see, there are many, many possibilities for this.
Brownian motion.
Entering into other places. Okay, so now everyone realizes why, you know, I enacted that part of the algorithm for you. Or rather, you enacted it for me. Okay, so in this particular version of the Society of Stick People, my goal is to, besides enjoying the dynamics of a population simulation in a simple finite state machine, my goal is to start to ask questions and generate discussion around the idea of sustainability. Hot topic, you know, all around the world, people are, I should say, in the United States, we're starting to catch up with our awareness of our role in destroying things with the way that we build and the way that we, you know, leave things behind and all of these types of issues. So in this world, all the stick people that are in the world right now are building, quote unquote, sustainably. So they're building these structures, these dome structures that already exist. And you see that the dome structures have gold girders, so to speak. And that's what signifies, in this world, that's what signifies a sustainably built dome. Now, the interactive part of this, if this was set up in a gallery space, I have the keyboard here, and I'm just going to kind of explain. You have to use your imagination a little bit. So there's one button, and it's going to insert stick people, little stick babies back there in the universe. Okay, so one button inserts sustainably acting stick people in the universe. So these stick people, as they use the resources and as they build, are going to continue to build the gold domes. They're going to continue to build in a way that's, that's good. And as I think about this conceptually and bring it back to our world, I think, okay, sustainable practices have to do with the way that we gather our resources. It has to do with the way that we use our resources. It has to do with the types of things we build and the way that we build them. And all of these result in this landscape that has an imprint of our activities and our lives as a society. So viewers number 1 through 10 have come up and they've inserted some sustainable stick people in the universe. Now somebody else comes up and they're going to insert some unsustainably acting stick people. You'll notice that there's nothing visually different about them. It's only manifest in their actions. And this is important to me. I feel like each of us has the capacity for great good and great evil. And it's really boils down to a matter of choice on a daily basis, choice on an individual basis, and the collective, the gathering of all of our choices into movements and into the possibility of change. So as those stick babies grow up, they're going to start building, and you'll see that the buildings that they build are going to darken, and they're going to turn black, so the girders will be black. And at this point, I'm going to actually rotate the camera for you a little bit, so you can see the contrast. At this point, it's relatively simple in terms of the simulation. The buildings that are built unsustainably decay more quickly. So as the society dies off, and you're left with a landscape of variously golden black buildings, and you continue to watch the simulation, the black buildings will shrink faster, noticeably faster. And this is not a direct one-to-one correspondence between the metaphor and reality. I think we can build unsustainably and have things that are lasting, long into the future, but in a harmful way. So it's an abstraction of an idea meant to elicit conversation and bring up discussion. So this is one project that I've been working on off and on for the last couple of years. I know it's fun to watch, but I'm going to stop it and keep on going here. All right, so just want to say thanks to United Arts of Central Florida, because they gave me some grant money, and it's important for me to say thank you for that. Let's see if we can. All right, here we go. So you'll see, that's just in case the program didn't run, but over on my notes page is just kind of some of my idea generation process. I look at this as having a basis somewhat in conceptual art. So I'm exploring ideas on paper. I'm thinking about algorithms. I'm thinking about structures and systems that I'd like to explore and their ties to my life or their ties to the world around me. And I'm thinking about how can I represent this in the virtual space in an artistic context and an aesthetic context that will invite discussion. I put this up again, we've seen this image before, because another area that I've really been interested in and explored a lot is working with strange attractors and chaotic dynamical systems. And I put this up again because we've talked a lot about root finding with polynomials. Here's my little, okay. And, you know, finding the zeros of the polynomial. And while I'm not a mathematician, I know enough about this to say that there's a correspondence with fractals such as Mandelbrot, there's a correspondence with dynamical systems such as strain detractors, where we have this Feigenbaum diagram that goes from kind of very predictable, ordered behavior, and then starts to do what they call a bifurcation at various points here. Bifurcates again, and you'll notice, and tell me if this is right. This is the real line right here? This is the real axis? And then a complex? So you'll see the correspondence visually with the Mandelbrot set, where you see the roots on the real line. And you'll see at this point, everything kind of explodes into chaos. So you get this very interesting behavior. This is generated by a very simple equation that was being explored, the logistic equation that was being explored to try and do things like population simulation. And as mathematicians explored this function, they started to see, there's some really kind of unpredictability here. There's chaos coming out, and this is very interesting stuff. I put this up here. This is, you can actually program an oscilloscope in an analog fashion to generate the Feigenbaum diagram. It's just stuff like that is very interesting to me. When I talk about strain detractors and I try and explain them to people, I often start with talking about a pendulum. And if you imagine a pendulum swinging back and forth, that's just a very simple pendulum, it's based on our reality, except instead of being just two-dimensional, imagine that you've got a weight on a string that's free to swing in three dimensions. And you give it a swing and it's going to swing and it's going to eventually settle down into a fixed point because of air friction, because of gravity, and because of those things. So that's one type of orbit that a dynamical system can settle into is a fixed point orbit. Another type of orbit that you can get is a periodic orbit. And I say, imagine a pendulum that's swinging in the same fashion, but there's no friction and there's no air. And so you can imagine that if you swing it in a certain way, it's going to trace out the same pattern over and over and over again indefinitely. Then I say, imagine a pendulum that has magnets on the base. And the magnets have a different polarity facing up as the one on the bottom of the pendulum that's facing down. And you get all sorts of crazy chaotic motion. And you can actually map that out and see the probabilities of the pendulum swinging in any particular location based on those magnets. This is the Lorentz attractor. Lorentz, as most of you probably know, was exploring things like atmospheric models. He was a mathematician and meteorologist. That's probably not the right word. I can't think of the right word. Anyway, he was studying, he was trying to come up with some simple equations that would help predict weather patterns. And in the process, he kind of stumbled across what's now known as the Lorentz attractor. And this is a representation, this is one representation of the Lorentz attractor, which is nice because you can actually trace the path of a particle around the system because you've got access to the differential equations there. That's another rendering of the Lorentz attractor with different parameters that go into the equation. Now this is the computer science friendly, programmer friendly version of the Lorentz attractor as a set of iterated functions. And using this version of the attractor, you can plot a point in three-dimensional space and use that point, plug back into the equation, and do this hundreds of thousands, millions, billions of times, and get these types of images in a way that's very friendly to programmers. And this is the kind of thing that I've been interested in and explored. So there's the Lorentz butterfly, and I'm all know about the butterfly effect. And it's kind of in our cultural consciousness now. All right, so another software demo here. This is a fun one. So we're actually looking at right now what they would call the pickover tractor. There's a guy named Cliff Pickover, and he wrote a book called Chaos in Wonderland that really was inspiring to me and got me interested in this kind of stuff. And if I rotate this, you'll see that even though it looks like this one has some depth, it's actually just existing on a plane. But the way that I've structured my software and the way that I like playing with it, I've basically got real-time access to the coefficients that affect the system. So one of the things that I really enjoy about using math to explore these things is that there's an infinite possibility and an infinite space of possibilities. And I really enjoy the process of exploration and discovery in this infinite space of kind of see myself as an explorer going through this space and carving out paths and trying to find things that are already there because they exist within the mathematical equations but are just kind of waiting to be discovered. So just to point out more to math and interesting math things, you'll see this would be kind of the example in the Stranger Tractor, the fixed point orbit. And then you'll see fun things like, you imagine that Feigenbaum diagram in this space, and it goes from this ordered behavior to a bifurcation, to another bifurcation, and eventually explodes out into chaos. This is kind of the same thing that's going on here. So these are pretty interesting things. I like to sometimes just jamming on this stuff. Stick on some electronica. Just explore the aesthetic beauty of the mathematical equation. It's really interesting when we start to get into three dimensions.
Can I ask a brief question?
Please do.
What's the art object? Do you sell the computer program? I mean, from a marketing point of view.
Well, that's a great question. I've made mostly prints in the last 5 years or so, and I've not sold many of them. It's very difficult to sell digital art prints.
Yeah.
So I've recently spent more time on enhancing the experience of using and seeing the software.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I guess my next step for that is doing things like showing the Society of Stick People in an art gallery context.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good for my artist resume, it's not so good for my pocketbook, so I do other things like video game development and web design and graphic design and that kind of stuff. I wouldn't call myself a natural business person or marketer.
Right.
And so, yeah.
I mean, something like this could almost be used in performance where, again,
absolutely,
the dancer is manipulating in real time.
Yeah, I actually have, it's interesting to say dancers, because there's a dance, contemporary dance group in Central Florida that I'm planning on working with and attaching the performance to Central Florida.
Yeah.
All right, so there's lots of cool stuff to explore in there, but I know time flies, and I've got some other stuff I'd like to show you guys. All right, so in the space of string tractors, you have four coefficients. And coming from an aesthetic or artistic point of view, I started to think, well, how can I take a step back from this space? How can I get to the next meta level and kind of understand what's going on here? So I started to learn about the Lyapunov exponent, which is a measure of how chaotic a system is based on the specific coefficients that are given. So if I see a particular strange attractor that's kind of thin and filamentous, its live Pinnock exponent is going to be smaller. It's less chaotic, and the really cloudy ones are more chaotic. So because I have four coefficients, I've got what I'd like to think of as a four-dimensional parameter space. And the way that I decided to visualize this in this next series, which I call Faces of Chaos, is to create this grid of images, 1,024 images, and two of my coefficients vary from left to right and bottom to top across the entire image, and the other two of my coefficients vary from left to right and bottom to top within individual images. In this way, I'm capturing some of the identity of the nature of these equations in an admittedly very creative and loosely mathematic kind of way. These are some of the individual images that exist within that large piece that was up there a second ago. Large piece I call Tiled Faces. This is called Chinese Warrior. Death Mask 2. Death Mask 1. And Owl King. And just to talk a little bit about my creative process in getting to this point. I have the idea. I try and characterize the space. I start writing some code and I start rendering some images. And I get thousands of images, and not all of them are interesting. You know? So I'm looking through these images and I'm trying to think, how can I put them together? Is there really anything in here? And I like to say I started seeing faces in the chaos because of the bilateral symmetry. Started to see this, you know, kind of pattern recognition, and started to pick out these images that were more suggestive of characters or of faces. And some people have said these have kind of a mythological quality. They feel almost archetypal, and subconsciously, I think that's something that was going on as I gave them names like Owl King and Chinese Warrior, things that are archetypes of, you know, warriors and kings and these kinds of far-reaching cross-cultural things that concepts, I guess, that exist within our physiology and within our consciousness. Going back to the stick people, another experiment that I've done extending the stick people into the fourth dimension, where the fourth dimension is time, is to take what I would call a digital chronophotograph, basically allowing the lens of the virtual camera to remain open as the simulation progresses, and basically taking a virtual long exposure photograph of the simulation. In this way, I'm kind of mirroring this idea of trying to capture the nature of the system because every time the society of stick people runs, it's slightly different. So my question in this case, my conceptual question was, how can I capture the nature of this particular evolution of the society in one frame? And these are some of my results. Going back to the strange attractors, this is some new work that I'm working on, taking the three-dimensional strange attractors into a system where I can actually simulate virtual light and create a shader that allows me to see both the surface of the image and the interior structure. Because one of the interesting things about these strange attractors is that they have, you know, they have an overall form, but they also have an internal form. And in the version of the program that I showed you where everything's running in real time, even the three-dimensional attractors kind of flatten out. And when I render them and print them out as prints, they kind of flatten out and don't really maintain the sculptural sense of three dimensions. So in this work, I'm starting to pursue that sculptural quality and trying to express that form and explore that form. And this is a rotation and disintegration of that form. How am I doing on time? Okay. All right, so this is something that's very much work in progress. Kind of will give you a sense of the way that I jump from thing to thing with a new idea. So what you see here is kind of a low resolution in white of a strange attractor. And one thing that I really like to do with the pickover attractors that seems to be either hard or impossible is to take a bounded area of the attractor and be able to zoom into it without having to compute all the points that exist outside of that bounded area. Okay, so the reason that's hard for the pickover attractor, whose forms I really like, because it only exists as the iterated functions. It doesn't exist as differential equations. So I don't know that there's really something within the equations that would allow me to set the bounds, because every time through the iterated functions, I get a new point, seemingly randomly, in three-dimensional space. So, you know, from my limited understanding of the mathematics and trying to explore this idea, I basically drew a box from -1 to 1 in both axes here, and started coloring the points based on where they had come from. Because I can't really go backwards, but I can keep track of, okay, I plot a point here, and the next point lands in the square that I'm interested in. So I started coloring the attractor that way, and I started getting these interesting patterns. And wondering, is there something here? Am I onto something? Is there a way that I can use this to kind of do what I want, to be able to almost infinitely zoom into this fractal structure? So I started getting these kinds of images. And basically, what I was doing here with the outlines is taking the set of iterated functions and recursing them on themselves. So using, you know, x prime equals, you know, that particular equation, taking that and substituting it in for x, and then plotting what I didn't know at the time. I wasn't exactly sure what I was plotting. So I just started kind of setting that to, you know, 0, setting that to 1, seeing what would happen. This is another recursion in that kind of fashion. Doing things with color, looking at these outlines, trying to figure out what was going on, kind of dancing around these ideas. And honestly, I can't fully remember all of the steps that it took to get from point A to point B, but eventually what I realized was, if I took each of those surfaces, x prime, y prime, and z prime, and plotted them in three-dimensional space and intersected them with a plane, what I was seeing with those oval types of shapes was the intersection of the plane with that surface. And the reason they were overlapping ovals is because you've got x prime, y prime, and z prime, and you've got these surfaces that are overlapping, producing these patterns. So here you see I guess in this case I was doing just the two-dimensional version of the equations. So here's the iterated functions, x prime and y prime. Here's with one substitution, and here's with two substitutions. And I start to get these images. So basically what came out of this, gonna go to another demo here. Okay, so at some point I discovered that the shapes themselves were interesting, and even though I didn't think I could solve my initial problem, I'd like to kind of take a rabbit trail and explore these shapes. So I created this pattern generator, and you basically what you're looking at is X prime and Y prime from above, and you're looking at the intersection of the plane with those two surfaces. So I can change the location of the plane and where the intersections occur. I can independently move each of the surfaces. I can zoom in and out, and then where it gets really interesting is I can start recursing those surfaces. And since I still have my four coefficients that go into these surfaces, I can start changing those as well. Depending on which coefficients I change, sometimes the resulting pattern is periodic and sometimes it's not. You can see. Start over again. The variety that I'm getting here is pretty fascinating to me. Okay, so black and white is, it's okay. You start to get a sense of what the possibilities of this space are. But eventually you want to start exploring things in color. And so I haven't had a chance to do much with this, but here's an example of one pattern rendered out from the pattern generator, brought into Illustrator and kind of turned into a repeatable pattern. So that's where I'd like to end my talk. I was looking forward to meeting him, actually. I was sad that he wasn't able to come.
Me too. Have you considered developing your game using some of Life's ideas?
I do you have a specific notion of the how those two intersect?
Well, in Game of Life, you have a grid and you have some rules, and then you seed that grid, and then you apply the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And it either annihilates completely, or it stabilizes into some shape, or it stabilizes into a moving shape. And it's all depending upon the rules, and the rules depend upon what is happening in the neighborhood of a given cell.
Right, right.
So, of course, your setup is far more sophisticated and complicated, but I'm imagining stick figures, they multiply if the environment is right, and
yes,
they
yes.
die off if it's not.
Yes, absolutely. The only global thing that I have going on is if the population reaches a certain point, for technical reasons, I introduce the plague and kill some off. But yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. You could kind of keep track of the population density, have that be a factor in the development of the society, have that be a factor in the birth rate, and the longevity, and the way that the buildings are built. There's also, what I like about this kind of exploration is it's a sandbox for me, and I can kind of go off in any one of a number of directions, depending on what I'm interested in exploring. I think we still have a question, and then we'll go back to you.
So, 100 years from now, someone is looking at one of your images, do you think someone will be analyzing it to determine if it's based on a hyperbola or parabola or catenary, or will they be trying to reconstruct the equations that you use?
How many years from now? I think how many years is the question. A couple hundred.
So the point is, does it matter at all what the equations were in the end?
It depends on the audience. I mean, to some of you it might matter. To most artists it probably won't matter. To me, it matters in as much as I enjoy the dynamic between the computer's ability to process and to envision these things, and the kind of push and pull between myself as the artist and the computer, and who has control over what, and kind of navigating that territory. John?
To follow up on his question about the game of life, people who play with cellular automata seem to be loath to do things in different levels at the same time. Like, introduce the notion of a zeitgeist. Like, we're all sure that we're going bankrupt right now, our 401k plans are worth half, and, you know, no one's noticed that it costs half as much to buy anything, so nothing's changed in a way. But the zeitgeist is we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. I'm exaggerating, but do you have any of that sort of, these sort of...
A strict adherence to a formal system?
No, just different levels of what you're calling the self, or what you're mm-hmm. calling the neighborhood, that there could be this sort of extended...
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting. I've shown the stick people a little bit, and it's interesting to hear people, how the viewers respond to the piece. So I've had a woman come up to me and say that she saw herself as the mother of all of the stick people, and so that was her kind of response to the piece and her positioning of the self with regard to the system. Some of my goals in using stick people versus using realistic, you know, more realistic figurations is that a stick person is something that everyone can relate to as an actor in a system. It removes some of those barriers and those boundaries to identifying with the work. So yeah, I would say I'd like the idea that it's open, that people can identify with an individual stick person, which was kind of the goal. If you come up and you press the key or the button that inserts somebody acting sustainably in the system, that's representing your choice as an individual within a larger construct that hopefully your actions will affect, you know, the outcome of the society. Helen.
I'd just like to see some of your stick people holding hands.
All right, thank you.